I have always been one to really emphasize that saddle fitters need to understand the saddle in order for them to be able to sell it properly. And as a brand as well, you're only as strong as your weakest saddle fitter, because it's never the saddle fitter, it's always the brand. And from a saddle fitting perspective, working as a saddle fitter myself, if you don't really understand the saddle that you're working with, and you really have to figure it out along the way, then you're struggling.
Hi everyone, and thanks for joining me here at SattelPro, the podcast dedicated to equine professionals and saddle experts. I'm Dr. Maren Bohleber, your saddle scientist. Do you ever find yourself working with a horse and sensing that the saddle is part of a problem, yet you can't quite put your finger on why or how to fix it? If that sounds familiar, you're in the right place. In this podcast, we dive into evidence-based insights, analyze real cases, and talk to leading experts from science and the industry. It's all about bringing research straight into your daily practice, giving you the clarity and confidence you need. Let's get started. Welcome to a new episode of SattelPro. I'm very happy that you are listening again, even if it's in English again, because we do have a very special guest today, Anne van Boxtel from the Netherlands. And I already had another English episode before, also with a guest from the Netherlands. And I already said my Dutch is really not existent before we switched and decided to talk in English for my own sake. Yeah, Anne, she is a saddle fitting specialist. She's a master saddler of the Society of Master Saddlers from the UK. She is a self-employed saddle fitting expert, has her own training school, the Equine Saddle Fitting Specialist, where she's the founder of, with a complete team behind her. And she has initiated the first saddle summit in the Netherlands. And this will be the topic we are talking about today. And I'm very eager and happy after some little technical issues, we solved the problem. And I'm so happy to have you here today and talk about not only about the saddle summit, but also saddle fitting and a little bit behind the scenes. Yeah, thank you so much that you took the time today to talk about it. Yeah, maybe you would like to introduce yourself briefly. What is your history of horses and saddles, and how is your background about saddle fitting and especially the saddle summit?
Okay, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. I'm really honored that you've asked me to be here. Yeah, a little bit more about me and my history in saddle fitting. I've always been a horse enthusiast. I was about 4 years old when I had my first riding lessons. I always dreamed of being the next Ankie van Grunsven, which was the biggest rider back then. I never was. And back then I had a horse who had issues. And each time we did a bit of rehab and then we started riding again, and she would go, well, lame again. And I kept asking myself, what if it's the saddle? Because each time we started go back onto work, and then it's a couple of weeks and then we're back at square one. So I asked a couple of saddle fitters to look at it, and everyone said, no, nothing wrong with your saddle. But there was just this feeling, this gut feeling of me, and I was like, there has to be something wrong with the saddle. And then a couple of weeks later, I was at work and I was browsing to a magazine, and there was an advert there from the MSFC for becoming a saddle fitter. And all of a sudden I was like, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. So I called them, and 3 weeks later I enrolled and I started my education as a saddle fitter.
Excellent.
First and foremost, just for my own horse. But then I got excited and I loved it. And there was very much an issue going on with my own saddle.
Oh, yeah.
The tree was twisted, and very much twisted. So there were a lot of compensational strategies going on with my horse. Despite all that, she never really got back into work fully. But then I did commit myself to saddle fitting. And I was very young at that age. I was just about 21 when I finished the MSFC course. And I started working as a saddle fitter. And rather quickly, I already noticed that there was still a lot of knowledge that we were lacking. So I continued to develop myself, worked as a sales agent for a while for an English brand. And from really that point of view, I came into contact with a lot of saddle fitters and a lot of saddle fitters that that I worked with and I trained, and I got them familiarized with the saddles. And that was pretty much the basics for equine saddle fitting specialist, because I noticed that there were a lot of colleagues that were really doing a decent job as saddle fitters, but we're lacking a bit of knowledge, and not only from saddle fitting, but also as entrepreneurs, they were really struggling. So I wanted to do something about that. And I wanted to incorporate new scientific research as well, because there was a lot of research going on. There is still a lot of research going on. But none of that was really incorporated in the studies that we had back then. So that's how I came up with the course. And I was like, someone's got to do it. I'm not going to do it, because I've got my hands full just working as a saddle fitter. But in the end, I just couldn't not do it. So we started that journey about 4 years ago now. And really, from that point of view, we came in contact with the arena that we're in right now. We've purchased this venue this year, and that opened up a whole new spectrum of things that we could do and we could organize. And we're hosting masterclasses and all kinds of things, really horse welfare related, with a strong focus on sales, obviously. But then we got to thinking as well, from my experience working as a sales agent, I always had a bit of a love-hate relationship with the regular trade shows, because although you meet a lot of people, it always is a bit, it's super static. It's really difficult to really talk about fit and to really understand fit while looking at a saddle book or so it's always a bit iffy. And then I noticed that we made a lot of appointments at regular trade shows, but then the real understanding of the saddles and a real loyal customer base from the brand I was working with, they've grown on us after the trade shows by me visiting them, going to them, showing them the saddles on the horses, explaining to them what works and what doesn't work, and why it works and why it doesn't work. So I have always been one to really emphasize that saddle fitters need to understand the saddle in order for them to be able to sell it properly. And as a brand as well, you're only as strong as your weakest saddle fitter, because it's never the saddle fitter, it's always the brand. And from a saddle fitting perspective, working as a saddle fitter myself, if you don't really understand the saddle that you're working with, and you really have to figure it out along the way, then you're struggling and you're going to do it wrong a couple of times. And that's part of the journey, but that's also a part that we don't like, because it always ends up biting us in the ass, so to say.
Absolutely.
And you always have to go back and fix it, which is human, we all do that. But I mean, if we can prevent that just a little bit by getting a better explanation of the saddles going, then I think we should. So me and my team, we were brainstorming about an event, and we were like, okay, what if we do like a trade show, but then make it hands-on, make sure that we don't just talk about saddle fit in a very static way without horses involved, but get the horses inside the arena, really put them central, and start talking about saddle fit then, because then it really, you can go a bit more into depth. And then that's really where Saddle Summit happened. And I was immediately so enthusiastic about the idea that we started brainstorming on when should we do it then. But mind you, this was like mid-August, and I was like, well, really the perfect time is like October, maybe beginning of November, because obviously you've got Beta going on at the end of August, you've got Spoga going on in February, March, and normally in the summer you don't really want to do anything, because it's either really close to Spoga or really hot, and everyone's on vacation, so this makes sense. And I was like, well, okay, that's really close, are we going to do it next year? So a couple of people in my team were like, okay, so that makes sense, so 2026. I'm like, nope, we're not gonna, no, I'm too enthusiastic now, we need to do it now. They were like, you're crazy. And I'm like, I know.
Excellent.
And then I started calling a couple of brands that I was working with, and yeah, they all agreed that it was a good idea, but they were all
Yeah.
like, well, it's never going to work in this time
In
frame.
this
You're not going to be
shortage.
able to do it.
No.
Yeah. And I was like, hold my
Excellent.
beer, I can.
Let's see.
So let's
No,
see if I can do it.
and I can assure you it has worked. It has worked excellent. So I went to
Thank
the
you.
first Settle Summit, and just for the listeners who are not so familiar with the Settle Summit and what it's all about, maybe in just one, two sentences, if you would explain it to people who haven't heard of it at all. Can you explain Settle
Yeah,
Summit?
Settle Summit to me is an immersive, hands-on saddle fitting trade show, if you want to call it, where we don't just talk about saddle fit, but we actually experience saddle fits, and saddle fitters who go there get to experience the saddles hands-on, and you get to put them on real horses and just have a feel and get really, really get in there, which, in my opinion, transform how they understand fit and horse compatibility.
Yeah, very
So,
good.
to keep
Yeah,
it
when I
short.
when, you know that the, I think that that kind of nailed it. When I came into the well, you can't really call it trade show. It was more like an event maybe,
Yeah.
or like a come together. And when I came there to and this is actually very funny, the location you did it was Maren Kessel, right? My
Yeah.
first name is
Yeah.
Maren, and I thought, okay, I really need to go
I need to go
there.
there.
Don't worry about the topic. I need to go to this location. No. Of course, I went there for the summit, and I came into it. It's a huge arena, including two indoor arenas. Actually, it's a huge kind of hall, including two arenas. Next to the main arena, there were 10, 15 stands, maybe. You know it better. But not
15,
too much, 15. Yeah, it wasn't overcrowded. It was kind of a little bit, well, in these times we have just before Christmas, it reminded me a little bit to the Christmas markets. So you have these little stands around the arena,
I can see what
and
you mean.
it was, well, of course it was very big and huge, but still very cozy and kind of intimate, I'd say. So a very welcoming atmosphere for the first step I stepped in there, and there were already people I already
That's good to hear.
knew, other saddle fitters, but also brands I was familiar with or I was already working with. So there was already kind of a connection when I stepped in for the first time into the hall. And that was for me, just as an impression, a very welcoming feeling. And then I've seen the horses
Thank you.
already in the arena and thought, okay, yeah, let's see what the day brings. For me, it was really at first very promising, but also in the end, yeah, very worth it to go there, because but we will talk about that in a minute. I've learned a lot, especially the community in the arena and in the hall. Was for me the best thing about the Saddle Summit, that everyone had the chance and took the chance to communicate and talk to each other, also if they are not working with each other yet. So there were so many opportunities, and I really like this type of setting. And for me, it was
Thank
completely
you.
new. And I think it is a kind of a unique summit, which is not existent out there in this setting yet. And therefore, I think it's very special. So,
Thanks. Appreciate that.
You talked a little bit about the idea and how it came up to you first. You created it especially for saddle fitters, not so much for saddlers who are producing and making saddles, but more for the kind of the service behind the saddle fitting, maybe. What were your ideas behind that? So why did you decide to mainly, not exclusively, but mainly, initiate it for the saddle fitters and have it as a target or like a group?
Well, I think by Well, again, by visiting regular trade fairs, what you get is that there's a lot of people there. And that's good because as a brand, or as a saddle fitter, there's just a lot going on, and it's really entertaining. And there's, especially looking from a brand perspective, there's a lot of reach that you're gaining. But the quality of the people that are there is not always the best if you have that many people there, because there's people with all different kinds of backgrounds. There's people working in horse shops who are just out there for a day, visiting, browsing around, seeing what's there. And in my years of working at trade shows, I've also noticed that sometimes there's just so many people there, and you can't help everyone. You can't talk to everyone. And then every once in a while, you spend a lot of time talking to someone who ends up just working in a horse shop, in a tech shop or whatever, who doesn't really work with saddles, but who's taken up a lot of your time. Which, I mean, on days like that, the time you spend talking to people, that's the most valuable thing. So you have to protect that a little bit. And then before you know it, they walk out with a price list in hand as well, which we don't want. We don't want that information ending up with the end customer, because they can't really do anything with that information. So that's why I wanted to really keep it concentrated on saddle fitters only. And then on top of that, I think that by doing so, the quality goes up, not just from the visitors, but the conversation as well. We can go further in depth just on saddle fit, which I think in 2025, going in 2026 in a couple of days, horse welfare has become such a big thing in the mainstream media even, and rightfully so. But I think it's really strange that we keep talking about saddle fit at regular trade shows without including the horse. And in some ways, a bit, I mean, you there's also a bit of a disconnect, I think, with the manufacturers and the saddle fitters. Manufacturers, 9 out of 10 times, don't necessarily fit saddles themselves. They don't see horses on a regular basis. They don't visit customers, and saddle fitters don't necessarily visit factories a whole lot. They don't know how saddle making really works. So they both speak a different language. And then you have a saddle manufacturer who comes up with a model 9 out of 10 times with a bit of feedback from the market, so the saddle fitters. And then they are explaining to the saddle fitter how the saddle hypothetically would work without them actually 9 out of 10 times trying them on a horse. And then you've got a saddle fitter on the other hand who has to blindly go by whatever the manufacturer is telling them, and then sometimes conclude that that isn't really what is going on in your opinion. And then you're stuck with a saddle which you think would suit type ho horse type A, and it's working for type horse B, which you already have a load of saddles for. So there's just a huge disconnect there, I think. And I think that by bringing this together, and that's what you've also seen, in my opinion, during Saddle Summit, is that there was, I think, the manufacturers and the saddle fitters came a lot closer, and they were looking at each other and at horses from each other's perspective. And I think that's a really good thing to be doing, because normally they're both just working on their own little islands, so to say, and not really working together. Yeah, so that's why I wanted to do it that way.
I think this is a very, very clever and smart point to get into the equation, I'd say, to increase and sharpen the communication between
Yeah.
the different disciplines
Yeah.
already, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is, as you said, in the end, it is the brand. If something is not working with a saddle, it is the brand. And
Definitely. Yeah.
but of course, the link between the brand and the horse is always the service, is always the saddle fitter. And the key for understanding in the end would be the communication, right? And
Exactly.
this is the main part where more light need to be shed on, I think, not only between saddle fitters and the brand or the manufacturers, but also between saddle fitters and the customers, for example, and the clients. The saddle fitter can know so much about saddles and fitting and the horse and the anatomy and everything, but if it's not communicated to the client, then it will kind of puff away, kind of. They can say something, but it will not reach the client and will not in the end get the target, the horse, and the welfare of the horse, because it will not get into practice. For example, if you advise that the client need to carefully, whatever topic, but carefully need to monitor the horse for changes, for example, or need to take the next appointment very seriously in 3 or 6 months. And but if you don't fill it with knowledge and, well, communication, then it's kind of, talking
It's
against the
really
wall.
reactive, isn't it? I think that's the way that we've been working for a very long time. I mean, when I started saddle fitting, the guideline was still checkups once a year, and then there were people there who were already like, once a year, that's a bit much, and I was like, no. And now with our current course, we're actually going to at least once every 6 months, but especially with younger horses or horses that we expect to develop, then it's I think it makes perfect sense to do it every 3 to 4 months or quicker even. But I think that what we've been doing as saddle fitters is we've been working very reactive instead of proactive. So we always get called as soon as there's already issues. And that also, I mean, I don't know if that is the case for Germany, but I expect it to be the same. I mean, saddle fitters, we don't have the best reputation in the saddle world, and with horse owners. So there is a bit of a trust issue sometimes. And then, of course, if we only get called as soon as there's already an issue going on, then it will quickly feel for a customer who already is a bit isn't sure whether or not she can trust us. It will quickly feel as if we're trying to deflect calls on them instead of on us. Which, at the same time, if we can't be there on a regular basis, we end up being reactive. And I think that as saddle fitters, we need to be much more proactive. And I think that starts by educating horse owners. And trainers.
Yeah, I 100% agree on that. I think, again, communication is key for this this knowledge transfer, I'd call this. But it's not only like, here, I have the knowledge and I want you to have it as well. It's more like the link between the knowledge and, in the end, of course, including it into the practice. So, and I think this is also a very profound column in your education, right? In your training center, the Equine Saddle Fitting Specialist Training Program, that you not only train the saddle fitting, the saddle specific knowledge and all that behind, but especially also communication skills and also business skills, right? I think this is also a very important point every saddle fitter, or at least actually everyone in the equestrian world, need to incorporate that it's not only about the knowledge about a special topic. If you're a trainer, it's not enough that you are very able to train the horse and to know yourself how to do it, but you of course need to communicate it to the horse owner that they can do it themselves in their practical training. And it is,
manage expectations. I think that's the most important thing for us as saddle fitters. We have to be super, super skilled at managing expectations, what to expect, what not to expect, when to expect to see us again, what to expect in your horse. I once had a client, which I think is still, I tell this to each year of students that I have, that I once had a customer who had a lovely horse, was a lovely customer. She was really sweet, but she had a really terrible saddle. So I took that saddle off. I told her to not work with the horse for a while. She took him to a physio and then she started working again. We had a new saddle fitted. And then a couple of weeks later, she called me and she was like, well, my horse isn't doing it anymore. And he's naughty and he's not working. And it must be your saddle. And so I went there and I was just starting out as a saddle fitter, so I was a bit nervous. I'm like, oh, she's angry, what am I going to do? And then while talking to her, she told me that she was working with him seven days a week. And I was like, well, okay, we were coming from 3 times a week, and now all of a sudden you're working him 7 times a week, you'd expect him to be a bit sore. I mean, if you all of a sudden start working and working out in the gym 7 days a week, then you'd not be feeling well either. This is not the saddle. It's just you're over asking, and it's you're not building this properly. And even then, 7 times a week, I think, is a lot. But I think that those things are just so important to be aware of as saddle fitters, and not assume that customers know these kinds of things, because 9 out of 10 times they don't. And there's just a lot of education going on for us, and a lot of explanation going on as well. We teach our students that especially fitting a new saddle, it can take up to like 3 hours just with all the things involved as well, and the expectations and the management around it, and when to call, how to call, when to expect another assessment going on. And
No, and I think this is a very important point you're talking about right now, because this expectation from oneself and from their own saddle fitting appointment, it's very important that you get to know that it can be longer than just half an hour or something. It can be longer than your colleagues do an appointment. It can be more seeing and getting to know more things. Because I think that it's not always about time. But if you only have a 15, 20 minute appointment, which I never have, but I couldn't imagine, because during the time I'm with a client, I'm with a horse, I'm, for example, measuring the horse, I'm doing static dynamic measurements and evaluations. And during this time, there's so much room for communication to ask about the horse, about how the horse is kept, how the horse is fed, how the horse changes during a year, how the horse is ridden, is there a trainer,
what's
is there another rider,
cycle?
The shoeing, everything. So, and as I said, there are so many different aspects of a horse's life, which in the end influence a saddle fit, but needs to be known to do a proper and long-lasting, satisfying saddle fitting, which you cannot receive in just a 15-minute or 20-minute appointment.
No,
I wouldn't
agree.
Say you always need to be 3 hours with a client. I mean, then you will never finish your day, right?
But no.
Of course, after a while, you get the right questions at the right time during your examination plan. But still, it is so important. If you're there for saddle fitting, you also need to know more, but only about the saddle and the saddle area of the horse, right? So much more. And this is, I can imagine, very difficult to incorporate into an educational program, because, of course, you can teach the several aspects. But the trick, I can imagine, the trick would be to connect it to each other, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can learn about anatomy, you can learn about biomechanics and shoeing, you can learn about feeding a horse and so on. But how is this connected to saddle fit? How can this influence the saddle fit for the horse? And I think this is first related to the experience you have after, where you just don't need to think about it. It's just like, okay, this is just, as you said before, 7 days a week. Wow.
Yeah.
This is, just separately seen very, very much. You should give the horse a break in between, right? Nevertheless, of course, from your normal human sense, of course, it has muscle sores and is maybe a little bit angry as well after without any, without any pause in a week. I would be very angry, at least.
Me too.
And I can imagine this must be very challenging to include into an educational program to
it
to
is
get the students a sense for that.
Yeah, that's why we included we make use of the blended learning method. So we do online and offline training, and of course saddle fitting in itself is a practical thing. You can't teach them that online through a screen, but you can teach them all the different aspects. So what we do is we prepare them online on horse biomechanics, rider biomechanics, theory of saddle fitting, so looking at a horse's conformation, and then reworking that to tree shape, panel shape, girthing options, all that kinds of stuff, and how a saddle is made, and all that, so that once we do get to the practical training days, they already have a sense of all the other things that are going on. So we can get more in depth. We don't have to start explaining them again, like, this is T18, this is the shoulder, this is, we've covered that bit. They know how to look at a saddle, how to look at a horse in a different way, other than, oh, he's got a lovely lovely head and he looks really sweet. Because we're all horse enthusiasts, and you'll come in and be like, oh, that's a sweet horse, and we want them, of course, to keep that a bit, but you need to make sure that they can put on a different hat and look at a horse from a different perspective. And that's what we do with the online training. So then, as soon as we start in the practical training days, we get a lot more depth to the training, and we add internships as well. And then still, I mean, it's never perfect. I think we could do, it's a year training. I think we could do 3 years before we'd actually really have the experts there. We always tell them, I don't know how to call it in English. You're ready to start, you know, the beginning, the basics, but you have to, it's a matter of like getting your driver's license. As soon as you get your driver's license, you know how to drive, but how to actually learn how to drive, you have to do that. In the field. And I think, I mean, that's the same with saddle fitting.
Yeah, it's always in the educational programs, right? If you have finished it, you are just the beginner. Then everything starts from the beginning. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I really like the idea to set kind of the backbone of the knowledge by online courses and everything you can more or less learn from books. But you put people behind in the online courses, probably talking from their experience, and do it more practical than just learning from a book, and then incorporate it into the practical world by doing workshops and practical learnings. And for example, also the Saddle Summit, right?
Exactly.
And I think a very important point here is also not only the communication between the client and the professional, and the saddle fitter, but also the interdisciplinary communication between the professionals, right? So having the saddle fitter talking to the trainer, for example, or the physiotherapist, or the vet, is so important. And sometimes, very hard if you don't really speak the same language, right? So there are so many saddle fitters or also saddlers out there which never have ridden a horse themselves. And I wouldn't blame that. They probably find strategies to work in their field as well. But for me, it would be very difficult to explain the feeling the horse rider should have if the saddle is, you know, fitted in this and this way. So kind of sharing my experiences, my practical experience as a rider to them to increase their perception in their feeling. You know what I mean? So I, for example, increase or make the balance of the saddle better. And for me, it's always a feeling of, oh, I'm sitting more into the horse. It's a really kind of satisfying feeling. And this is something they should feel. And if they don't feel it, I need to readjust again, for example. I can imagine it might be a little bit different if I'm not a rider myself and I have never felt what I'm talking about. But nevertheless, you don't need to be a physiotherapist, a vet, and a nutrition expert to be a good saddle fitter, I understand. But at least I think you need to be aware of their language and of their fields to get in a good communication with other, right?
I 100% agree.
No. And I think therefore the Saddle Summit is a very, really good place, at least to get in exchange with the saddle fitters in their field, but also the saddle makers, which, as you said in the beginning, some of them are maybe already people you are already working with, but some of them are also new. For the saddle fits, for myself as well, I've had very interesting and nice conversations with some saddle makers from UK, for example, and that was really, really, really nice. And I really love then the opportunity to see the saddles on the horse. And I think this is something maybe we want to get into that a little bit deeper yet, how this was managed at the Saddle Summit in the end. So we had the saddle makers standing like in a Christmas market, standing around the arena and with their saddles, with their products. And then you had a timetable where the different saddle brands had the opportunity to present their saddles on the horses in standing, but also dynamically. So they were also ridden, and there were some different type of horses, very well-trained horses, very in a very high-level dressage horses, but also young horses, and of different shape and different training situations. So maybe you want to talk a little bit about your decision of choosing the horses. Were there any, I don't know, I'm sure there were some thoughts about that. So maybe you want to share with us a little
I think this was the most challenging
bit.
part of Saddle Summit altogether. I have to say, with your education, getting the right horses is always the most tricky part as well. So we knew what we were getting ourselves into. The only thing that we didn't know is how many horses that we'd actually need in those 2 days. So that was a bit tricky. And obviously, I mean, it's a different type of experience for the horses as well. So number one thing is was we need to have horses who are going to be able to manage this
Stress.
mentally, because it's yeah, it was quite, you've seen it was quite a setup. So yeah, when we were we've got a couple of people that we work with throughout the courses as well, which are kind of regulars, so they'll be there every year once or twice. So we asked them beforehand, and we really wanted to have all types of horses, because like we had all kinds of brands here as well. So we tried to have horses here that would fit the brand in a certain way. So we had a more of a Baroque horse for Massimo, for instance. We had a bit of a more of a sport horse for Frank Baines. So we tried to have something that fits the brand as much as we could. But then at the same time, it really was a challenge to get this many horses who would be able to manage in an area like this in to begin with. So it was interesting. And we tried to have horses all above. There were some types of set measurements that we had, like needs to be a horse from at least 160. The rider can't be in a size 46 European sizes. We don't want riders taller than 180, because then you get into the excesses, which we get them in practical trainings anyway, so we have to manage that. But that really wasn't the point of Saddle Summit. It wasn't the point to fit the excesses. It was the point to understand the basics of the way that these models should work on
Of course.
horses. So we wanted to keep it somewhat general, but also have different types of horses available to suit different types of saddles and different riders, obviously.
No, and I think that was very successful. There were a wide, kind of variation of horses and also riders, and not all of the horses were ridden, which was fine. I think the welfare of the horse was always central in the event, which I really liked, because there were some horses which, for example, also saddle brands said no, the muscle status isn't well enough yet to see dynamically. We can put the saddle on and explain a little bit about it, but we cannot really use it as an example in a written way. And that's fair enough. I mean, these are examples we have out there in the practical
In the
world.
field, yeah. And I think also, I mean, of course, it was nice to have some saddles ridden, but to me, in all honesty, it was more about the hands-on experience. I mean, we can do, as saddle fitters, we can do several demonstrations, and a couple of brands already do like brand days, which they incorporate horses in, and they start riding and they do a bit of a demo and they do a show, which is really interesting. But for me, as a saddle fitter, and the idea, the focus of Saddle Summit for me needed to be on the fact that we as saddle fitters could come in the arena, grab a saddle, put it on a horse, and feel how it works. And then I mean, you can't expect in such a short period of time that the demos that were in, that the saddles will fit perfectly. So you
No.
always see something when doing a written assessment. There will always be things that you're like, nah, I want it needs to be a bit narrower, it needs to be a bit more flocking, it needs to be whatever. But by doing the static assessment and having a feel on the saddle, you can understand why it works or why it doesn't or what it needs to be. But you get a better sense of how it fits and what horses it would be compatible with than just
Absolutely.
looking on it on a saddle book. And I think the written assessments are nice, to me at least. If you feel differently, then I'd like to hear that. But I think the main focus for me, Saddle Summit going forward, I see it more on the hands-on experience. And then of course some written assessments, but I don't think that's always as beneficial as just feeling a saddle on a horse.
I actually I agree. I can compare it a little bit to my, my practical workshops I offer out there for clients, but also for professionals. And the static assessments, most of the time, the most, well, how to put this, rewarding or the
Eye-opening, maybe.
most beneficial, because there's a time where they can really put the hands on, ask the questions why they're feeling something. When they have the hands on the horse and the saddles, and if they watch a ridden horse in the saddle, of course you can explain a lot, and this is also important, I think. I wouldn't exclude it,
No,
but
no.
I think the main point is first on the static analysis, especially for if you see the combination, this special saddle on this special horse for the first time. So if you have the first impression of both components, then the static analysis or evaluation is just, more beneficial than the written evaluation, I'd
Yeah,
say.
I think it gives us as saddle fitters more information than a written assessment with a saddle, which you know isn't going to be 100% match at that point. It can't be. So I think that's, yeah, it gives us
Plus,
just a bit more info.
Plus, of course, I mean, if you're more experienced and have maybe some experiences with this couple, this special saddle, this special horse, and you go then into the dynamic evaluation, there are so many more things to concentrate. Not only the saddle, not only the horse, but also all the dynamic aspects. For example, what about the gait analysis? How is the horse moving? How is the biomechanics of the rider? What about the aids they're giving with the legs, with the hands? What does the movement of the body tells us, and so on and so on. So there are so many. It's much more difficult to evaluate in the dynamic state. Of course, you cannot neglect it.
No,
It's very
no.
important to include it. One of the major points, actually, in your saddle fitting assessment. But for educational reasons, I think first comes the static part and then the dynamic part. And if you need to choose between one of them, I would concentrate on the static part first, and then as a topic as a
Add
how do
on.
you add on as a topping in this, then you can include the dynamic part as well. I completely agree. What I really liked during the saddle summit was that you were actually able, as a saddle fitter, you were able to get into the arena next to the horse, next to the manufacturer, and you can ask the questions you have in mind directly, without any buffer in between, directly to the manufacturer. And this is something I really loved about the saddle summit, the direct communication to any questions which are raised. I really would love to do this again.
It's gonna happen again,
It's
so
gonna, okay, so
yeah, the date
maybe
is set for next year, so
excellent. Before we come to that, maybe I just have one thing in mind yet. You said you had such a short period of time preparing and, well, actually initiating the summer. It was like 2 months, 3 months, something like
Yeah,
this.
it was a 9 to 10 weeks. It was, yeah.
What
It was insane. I have to say, I was
a
completely broken as soon as we
nightmare.
started.
No, I
I
can
was
imagine.
like, I collapsed in a week after. We cleared out on Monday. We finished everything up. The arena was empty, and I was like, yep, that's it. I'm out. Don't call me.
You didn't give the impression when I saw you at the summit. You were like, wow, I'm
There was a
so
lot of
present.
adrenaline and a
And
lot of makeup.
no.
A lot
And
of
you also
concealer for these black.
for the shadows. No. I couldn't say that when I saw you. But you also, it wasn't only the location and the event that you've managed. You of course also needed to do all the marketing behind, because it was a complete new event, a completely unique. No one has heard about this before. So how, what was the most challenging part in thinking back? Was it, I mean, there are so many aspects, I guess.
It was, yeah, it's impossible to name one thing which was the most challenging, because like I said, I mean, it was mid-August when we thought about it, so a lot of companies were still on holiday break, so we needed to have like an event floor and the stands and all that kind of stuff, but all those companies were still, I was waiting on answers on prices so I could communicate with manufacturers on stand prices. And before I got those prices, we were all already 2 weeks. We're gone. So I was like, okay, now we only have 6 weeks left to fill the stands. And then, of course, we needed to create the Event Goose shop, which needed work. But yeah, that's hindsight. And then, of course, the marketing. I mean, the brands were relatively easy. That is just, I mean, it was 15 brands. That's just a matter of picking up the phone and start calling them.
Did you already knew them before? Do you work with them
A
already, or
couple. I wanted to have a mix of well-known brands, which we all see at the regular trade fairs. But also, to me, I call them like the hidden gems. The brands that we don't normally get to see that much of. We don't go to Beta or Spoga or the bigger events just because they're a bit smaller. And I mean, those are very expensive events as well. So I wanted to have them there too, to one, give them a shot, and two, because we see, especially here in the Netherlands, is that a lot of saddle fitters are working with the same brands. So to try and find something unique and to really position yourself as a saddle fitter by doing something different is just really hard, because it's, yeah, we all tend to flock to the same brands. So I wanted to have a couple of newer brands there, or lesser known brands to us at least. So yeah, that was just a matter of Googling. And just I was on Instagram a lot, and just looking at different brands and kind of seeing like, okay, what it, from a saddle fitter's perspective, I don't work as a saddle fitter anymore, but what type of brands would I be interested in? And I just started calling them, and luckily most of them were really enthusiastic. There were a couple that couldn't make it because it was really short notice. A couple who I wasn't able to really get the how to call it, the brand across, or the way that we're going to do it. They were a bit like, I don't know. But most of them were immediately like, yeah, makes sense.
Nice.
Let's
That
do
is the
it.
gap, we're waiting for so long.
So that was really nice. So we closed up those spots rather quickly. We did have a bit of a struggle because originally, because we have two arenas, I wanted to do a demo area in the bigger arena and then keep the stands in the smaller arena. But then halfway through, I was like, well, I think it's going to be really busy in the demo area, and I think it's going to be really quiet in the exhibition area, and I wouldn't be happy as an exhibitor. So I was like, okay, what if we literally put the whole central, and what if we focus everything around the demo area, a bit of like a Christmas fair, like you said. And I was immediately very enthusiastic, but by then I had already sold quite a bit of exhibitor spaces, and I had to turn my complete layout around, and I was like, this is tricky. We're gonna do this, but this is like, you should have thought about this a bit better. But it worked out in the end. And then with regards to the marketing for the visitors, that was I was very happy that we had a lot of manufacturers on board who were really enthusiastic about the idea as well. So they did a lot of emailing to their customers and they put it
Oh,
on
yeah.
websites and on their Instagrams. So that definitely helped. And then besides that, my mom, who actually works for me, she has been emailing loads of people. There was a shit ton of time that just went into direct emailing people like, hey, this is what we're doing. This is why we think it works, and you need to be there. And
Excellent.
here you can buy the tickets. And that worked. That really paid off.
Cool.
But there was a lot of time going into that.
But
Yeah.
it worked in the end because how many visitors were there? Like 100 a day or something?
Give or take. Friday was busier than Saturday. I think it was Friday was a bit more than 100, and Saturday was a bit just below 100. So,
And I
yeah.
think that's for this kind of very special niche, it's huge, right?
Yeah.
And only this shortage of time of
Especially in the short
preparation.
amount of time. I have spoken to a lot of people, visitors that wanted to come but just couldn't make it, especially from overseas. There was a group from Australia that were really interested, but they just couldn't make it in time, which I get. I'm definitely hoping that next year will be bigger. But at the same time, I do want to keep it intimate. I don't want.
Yeah, I think that's makes the beauty of it as well,
Yeah.
right? That it's not too big, too
Yeah.
Svoboda-like kind of,
Yeah.
but that the intimacy will be kept. And
Yeah.
from the retrospect perspective, how would you say it was pretty international, I remember. So who or what country would be there most? Probably Netherlands, I guess, because it took place in the Netherlands, or
Yeah.
maybe the
Yeah, and Germany
neighboring.
was really big as well. There were a lot of German saddle fitters there. So I think the Netherlands and Germany were biggest. The ones that stood out to me most, I've actually spoken to him personally. There was a man from, I think it was Wisconsin or something like that. I mean, it was the US.
Somewhere,
And he told me he never went overseas. He was actually never gone overseas, and he was like in his 70s. And he never actually visited a trade fair before because he was always like, well, I haven't got time to do it. And it's just, I mean, yeah, what's the point? But then he saw this one, and he was like, I need to go there. I need
Nice,
to go there. So
nice.
that was super nice for him to be there.
That's
Yeah, that
a
really
very
stood out
nice
to me.
feedback.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Great. One thing was everything was in English. All the presentations were in English. Do you feel that this was for some of the visitors, well, I don't know, a rejection or a thing which was hard to overcome or to have. Well, already in the decision process, maybe that
I don't
some people
know,
not
in all
following the
honesty.
language.
I haven't heard that feedback before. I know that in the Netherlands, talking English 9 out of 10 times isn't that big a deal. Looking back, with our saddle fitting course, we are looking to go overseas or internationally. And we did get the feedback on that, is that when we do a course, for instance, for Germany, we would do it in German. That
In
would be
German.
best. So I'm not sure. I mean, if it's an issue for the course, it might be an issue for Saddle Summit as well, for a couple of countries. At the same time, I think if you want to do something internationally, you kind of don't really have a choice but to go for English. I mean,
Absolutely.
doing it in Dutch doesn't make sense at all because no one speaks Dutch. German might make sense, but then at the same time, I wouldn't be able to host it because my German is really bad. I think it's the most logical option, and yeah, hopefully it won't exclude too many people. I would really hate for it to do that. Maybe we'd look at translation options or something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
No, I had also the impression that you, at least during the summit, well, I've spoken to a lot of German brands, but also saddle fitters, obviously, but also international ones. And I didn't have the impression. I just was asked about another saddle fitter. Oh, yeah, you're going, but it's in English. It was like, okay, yeah, I haven't actually thought about that, but of course, it could be a limitation for some people.
I guess it could.
Yeah, maybe translational option could be a possibility, but still, it was very the examples were so illustrative, so very there were so much kind of pictures in the explanations that I think the language isn't really an issue in the end. And
No, yeah. I hope so. Yeah.
And one last specific question about the summit, maybe. We have seen a lot of horses presented in dressage, and therefore, of course, a lot of dressage saddles were demonstrated. Would there be in the future the idea of also including more jumping saddles, maybe a jumping session or something?
Definitely. That wasn't really intentional this year. It kind of just happened. And we did have some saddles who brought jumping options, but for some reason it was just mainly dressage that was put out in the arena. We do want to do jumping sessions next year. We are thinking of splitting it up into two arenas, so incorporating the other arena as well, and then keeping one big demo area, so and basically keep the setup as it is, as it was last year, but then don't do two demo areas in the big halls, but do one, and then in the other hall we're gonna have some smaller areas which are only going to be dedicated to static saddle fit, which will be a bit more hands-on as well if I get my way. Where the idea is that then as a saddle fitter you can just go onto a stand and be like, hey, can I put that saddle on a horse, and the
That's
horse
so
will just
cool.
be available, you can just go out and do that. And then the demos will be, I think, a bit more structured and more polished than they were this year, because I mean this year as well, nobody, including the manufacturers, they didn't really know what to expect, and of course we briefed them on what to do, but you could sense that everyone was a bit out
Nervous.
of, yeah, a bit nervous and a bit out of their comfort zone, and they didn't really know what to expect. So I think next year will be better anyway. But I think that by separating the two, I think both will be of better quality. And I think there's a bit more space then to put some jumping poles in the arena and do a jumping clinic, because obviously the arena was too small to actually do a jump. Now you could put a
No,
jumping saddle
absolutely.
on, but you can't jump. But we can't do that next year, in the way
Well,
that we're going to set it up.
that's interesting, yeah. And I really like the idea to have a separate arena for just spontaneously put a saddle on, because being on one of the stands and a question arise, that would be very easy to put it, put this on the horse and discuss that question.
It's going to mean even more horses for us to arrange, but we'll be fine. We'll manage.
You're already experienced with it,
We've
so
got more
no.
time. That helps.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, and I'm really eager if we have more time. If I mean, look what you've done in what, 9 weeks or something. Look, imagine
know.
what you can do in 9 months.
The
Wow.
pressure, the pressure.
No pressure. So you said there's already a date for next year. So especially for the listeners who are very eager now to get the experience themselves, would you like to share the date with us
Yeah, of
already?
course.
Or
It's going to be 9 and the 10th of October, so it's going to
October.
be a bit earlier in the year. Just before the clock goes
Oh
forward
yeah,
as well.
good.
So we have a bit more daylight, hopefully. It's only like th 3 weeks earlier, but hopefully it'll be a tiny bit warmer, especially with a bit more daylight. So yeah, that's
Okay, yeah, sounds great. Yeah, it's just after end of September, and September is always very nice and warm, and no,
So
I think that's a
we're hoping for some summer evening vibes, late summer evening.
Yeah, I'm sure. You just need to to think strongly about that and it will happen.
We'll manifest it.
You're right. That sounds so great. Anna, I'm so happy with that we had the chance to talk about all the different aspects of Settle Summit and also the training course and Settle Fitting as well. And
Thank you very much.
Yeah, for the audience who are now very interested in visiting the Settle Summit, we put all the information in the show notes, and also if you agree, the your contact dates where to contact you if there are some questions arise. And then there's nothing left to thank you about everything, the time, and that we had the opportunity to talk to each other. It was a very nice talk. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It was lovely. And for everyone listening, if there's anyone that has some feedback or ideas on Settle Summit, then please just get in touch with us, because we're open to hearing everyone's thoughts, really. Because I think it can only make things better if we just get together on it a bit more.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely. Yeah, go ahead and contact Anna. I think Insta is very well for that. I've contacted you the first time via Insta, and it worked very well. So, but of course, we also put all the other contact dates.
Yeah, we will.
Thank you again, and for all the listeners, thank you for listening, and hear you in the next episode of Subtle Pro. I'm looking very forward to that. Bye bye.
Bye.